Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio, Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to a Monday all day long. Let's just call it a meatloaf Monday. That's what it is. Hit it, man.
I think I'll try the meatloaf sandwich.
Do you know what that is?
Yes, meatloaf.
What is it? I'm only asking in case I have to describe it later to a doctor.
Look, it's nutritious. It's delicious.
Made out of meat. Add ketchup if you want. I couldn't care less.
Meatloaf Monday. And pushing the buttons and thinking about meatloaf is JP. Hey, buddy. How are you?
I mean, I'm probably fooded out at this point.
Fooded out.
I've had a lot of food over the last week.
I have had more processed sugar in the last probably 72 hours than I've had in the last 72 days.
Yeah, I had a lot of food last night. You're a witness to that as well.
I've heard, is processed sugar cause like joint inflammation? Like I ache right now.
Probably.
Like my joints ache like I'm just old.
This is what RFK is for. He's going to come in and fix this.
It's all going to be cane sugar.
Yeah.
And goodness and things from Europe. It's going to be great. We'll see. All right. Hey, we got a great show laid on for you coming up at 2:30 p.m. Now, y'all may have heard, by the way, right here in our listening area, we did have a tornado touchdown in Athens. And there was a great deal of damage done to the downtown area, to include, by the way, the area in and around the Alabama Veterans Museum, which I'm very fond of. But we've got our friend Alif Mathens is going to call in and give us a heads up on what she's seen and heard about the damage in Athens, just to make sure that we know what our friends in the listening area have been going through. So that's at 2:30. Just got a quick update from Alif Mathens, boots on the ground there in Athens, about the tornado. Then at 3:30, Alabama State Republican Party Chairman John Wall calling in. Going to talk about, okay, where do we come from and where are we going, Republican Party? What is happening next? What can we expect? And that includes state and federal. So, yeah, John Wall, chairman of the Alabama Republican Party, calling in at 3:30. And then I've got a triple dipper just filled up with stuff. So hit it, man.
The triple dipper. Three stories you've got to know.
That's right, the triple dipper, three stories, three themes, if you will, that you got to know as we run today's show. First one out the gate, the H-1B. Have you heard about this? Why does that sound like a virus, the H-1B virus? No, it's not. It's the H-1B visa. H-1B visa is apparently all the controversy. Now, I'll be honest with you, I think part of the controversy is the press needing a controversy, and that's a big chunk of it. But the other part is there have been varying opinions. Wait. I thought we were all in lockstep. I thought everybody agreed on everything. No, apparently not. We'll talk about this. The H-1B, what is it? How does it work? And why do we care? As number one on the triple dipper. Number two, I'm just calling it now what? What can we expect out of Trump's first 100 days? What's he say he's going to do on day one? What should Republicans expect, or even for that matter, require of our leadership to include the House and the Senate? We're going to talk about it. Number two on the triple dipper is called now what? And number three, the end of an era. Yeah, there are people saying that the end of the second progressive era is over. Wouldn't that be awesome? I would love to think that's true. But what does that mean? What was the progressive era? What was the first progressive era? Why is a progressive era over? Can we really say that we're through with progressives? I don't think we're through with them. But with all things being cyclical, we are looking at the end of a progressive era, potentially. That's number three on the triple dipper. All right, well, let me jump on into my opening monologue, the Right Side Way monologue. As always, I remind you guys that attorney Stan McDonald, a partner at the law firm of Wilmer & Lee out of Huntsville, is the sponsor of the daily Right Side Way monologue, and I'll tell you more about him in just a minute. So, okay, I'm about to make an analogy that is going to rankle some feathers. I feel certain, because it relates to that debate that I spoke of just a moment ago. The fact that there's a lot of debate out there about H-1B visas is a clear indication that apparently Republicans do have their own minds. So if you're not familiar with the H-1B, it's a special visa that under certain circumstances, it allows an employer to apply for a foreign national to be hired to work in the United States because that foreign national has some unique skill or qualification or level of expertise that cannot otherwise be found by them in the U.S. And it gives employers ostensibly the opportunity to get the best of the best from the world hiring pool, as opposed to being just, you know, confined to the hiring pool here in the U.S. of A. Well, there's pros and cons. I mean, think about it. Let's picture it this way. Baseball is an international sport, right? But it was invented in America. Baseball in America is still a multi-billion dollar enterprise, with fans spending good money for tickets to watch their favorite team play for the pennant. But should American baseball only be allowed to hire American-born players? I mean, what if they were born somewhere else but they played college ball while they got their degree in America? When is it allowed? Huh. Or what if a team owner just wants to make a play for the pennant, but he needs the best designated hitter that money can buy? But that guy happens to be Shohei Ohtani, who plays in a Japanese league and doesn't even speak English. But Shohei Ohtani, arguably the best player in all of professional baseball in the whole wide world, he now plays for the LA Dodgers. He's now heralded with helping his American team to the World Series, and he's also named the MVP while he was there. Ohtani is the dual-threat pitcher and hitter who is already being compared to names like Babe Ruth, but he's playing an American-made sport, right? On an American team. In America's greatest national championship game. But he's not from here. He's not a U.S. citizen. Couldn't some other American-born player have taken his spot? Did they give a spot to a foreign-born guy that should have gone to an American? Short answer is no. The owners of the Dodgers saw no way to find someone of his caliber. They needed his expertise, so they went abroad. And it paid off. And not a single Dodgers fan regrets that decision, by the way. But, okay, let me make another analogy. Let me take it down another road, literally. If you listen to this show for even a little while, you know that I'm a car guy. I'm a frustrated car guy because I don't have a classic car to mess around with right now, but I'm a car guy nonetheless. Particularly, I love classic American-made muscle cars. If I had a dream car garage, it would contain a Grabber Blue 1970 Mustang Mach 1 with a 351 Cleveland close ratio top loader transmission mated to a Hurst T-handled shifter. Oh, yes, it would. Generally speaking, I'm a Ford guy. First on race day and all that. But there's others outside the Blue Oval family that I do have my eye on, like a Mach 1 Mustang would look really good in my garage next to a 71 Hemi Cuda with a pistol grip shifter in the console and that cheese grater grill. Yes, sir. Have I thought about it? Yeah, I have. So my first car that has been talked about on the show multiple times, my first baby had four wheels, a 68 Mustang Coupe with a 289. And I loved that car. I drove it all through high school and college. Eventually, life took over. Charlene and I did part with it to help pay for married life with a new real baby. But I still have a picture of it on the shelf in my office. But here's where I get to my analogy. I'm a car guy, right? Well, in the car world, there are different versions of car guys. There are those who believe that no classic car should ever be touched to the extent possible. Just get it running and then leave it alone. They believe in collecting what are known as survivors, with original paint, matching numbers on the engine, no changes from the original. And then there are those who are restorers. They believe that putting a car back to its original state in a pure and unadulterated manner is the ultimate in car culture, right down to the labels and the nuts and the bolts and the hoses. And then there's the restomods. The restomods, the guys who see a car and they want to make it look and run great, but they want more from it than what the factory could provide, so they put more stuff on it that came from the aftermarket. I'll be honest with you, I would say that my first baby, my 68 Mustang, would have to have been called a restomod. I restored the interior to factory stock, but I also installed an aftermarket sound system. I kept the original wheel covers in a box in the garage, but I thought it looked better with some classic chrome Krager mags. I kept the original 289 V8, but I wanted some more performance, so I opted to have it bored 30 over. I added an Edelbrock aluminum intake, a Holley 4-barrel carb, a crane cam, some hooker headers running out to dual exhaust. Why am I telling you all this? Because I saw a classic car that I loved, but I wanted more than I could get from the factory. So I went elsewhere, and I got parts and performance that I wanted. And it ran like a scalded dog, man. It sounded mean when it fired up. It turned heads, and it made me happy. And one day, I'll get back to another classic car. I'm sure of it. But that, my friends, between the baseball and the car analogy, that, my friends, is the H-1B visa program in a nutshell. And suddenly out of nowhere, there's a debate raging among the right side of the political aisle about whether or not the H-1 program needs to be shut down. Elon Musk says no way. He says Tesla and SpaceX wouldn't be here today if he had only been able to hire from within the United States. He needed more, he thought, than what he could find here at home, so he also hired from abroad. He's got a point, and Vivek Ramaswamy has also joined him in the argument. To use my car analogy, Musk and Ramaswamy, they're kind of like Restomods. Take what they got, add more to it from sources that are not pure and confined. But I'll also say this, too. Musk and Ramaswamy both went too far when they said that anyone who doesn't like the H-1B program is a racist. Come on. I mean, just because you like Restomods does not mean someone else can't also have a Concours-level full restoration using only factory parts. But there are those who point out that the H-1B visa program is rife with fraud and corruption, and they would be right. There are constant and very recent stories in the news of abuses of the H-1 program by employers forging documents to bring in cheap labor, at the expense of American workers, by the way. And they deserve to go to jail. But the H-1 system, it also deserves to be looked at and maybe revised. American workers should never have to be faced with not being able to get work because somebody gamed the system using false pretenses to get a leg up on a foreigner over an American. So the calls are out right now to shut down the H-1B visa system completely, but that's misguided, in my opinion. It needs to be tamped down a bit. That kind of rhetoric is not necessarily helpful. We cannot be so purist in our mentality that we imagine that there's no one else in the whole world who can help us make something uniquely American even better than it is right now, or that the only people who can do a job are here in America. At the same time, we do not need Americans losing jobs to cheap foreign labor, and that's got to get fixed. I mean, keep in mind, the U.S. space and missile program lagged behind all the efforts of German engineers from the middle of last century, so what did we do? We brought over Wernher von Braun and a team of German scientists, and they set up their new homes right here in our listening area in Huntsville, Alabama, and they joined with other highly skilled and highly qualified U.S. engineers and scientists, and they put a man on the moon. They took America to the space age, and they built a city called Huntsville, Alabama, from a small, semi-rural cotton town to the fastest-growing center of 21st century technology. Von Braun had been building rockets for our enemies. And then we brought him over here anyway and put him to work for us, and the world was changed for the better. The difference was, though, we didn't fire any American workers to get a cheap version of a scientist. Von Braun joined the American experts. Von Braun did have a skill set that we didn't fully have. He had expertise and experience that we did not have on hand. We wanted to innovate and explore and grow and build, and we needed a German expert to come in and help us get there. Okay, but we did it in a way that made sense, and that, my friends, is the difference. So yes, if you believe that American products should only be built by American workers, I can only agree to a point. I agree to the point that we can do so in a way that does get us there the fastest, the cheapest, with the highest quality possible, so American consumers benefit from it. But if there's a missing link, if we lack some piece of expertise or experience and some person in a foreign country is willing to leave their homeland to come make ours better, let's figure it out. If you're trying to game the system, though, and get one over on your own countrymen by hiring cheap foreign labor, then maybe you need to go to jail, and I'm all for you spending your time behind bars. And if you own a company, though, that can't find someone to fill a gap in your capabilities, and it does take looking abroad, then why do I care? Just don't cheapen America and cheat America in the process. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Yeah, the reality is this. We've got a situation right now where there has been a gaming of the system, and that's got to get fixed. You can't just hire cheap foreign labor. But there's a truth to the fact that we cannot, in all humility, believe that all of the best are here. There might be somebody in a foreign country who can add to what we've got and make it better. Shohei Ohtani playing baseball brings that whole situation to the forefront. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Tell me I'm wrong. We'll be right back. We are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just pulling pins on truth grenades. All right, text lines are open. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Text it or call it. Same number for both. Before we go any further, I got to tell you, though, attorney Stan McDonald. So he's the sponsor daily of the Right Side Way monologue. But attorney Stan McDonald, a partner at the law firm of Wilmer and Lee, he's a 30-year veteran in the practice of law. I know him personally. I think the world of Stan. Not only will Stan, by the way, advocate and fight for your legal needs, but he's also been a warrior for things that are near and dear to the Right Side Ruffian community for decades. I mean, he's just been out there in the mix, y'all. So attorney Stan McDonald, he has represented his clients in literally thousands of real estate transactions. He can represent you in every level of court, state, local, and federal. And he also, by the way, likes to say, I say for him, I mean, that when Stan McDonald's on your side, you got no greater friend, and your adversaries will have no greater foe. So, attorney Stan McDonald, here's the deal. Here's how you contact him. You ready? Stan McDonald, the law firm of Wilmer and Lee in Huntsville. Stan McDonald, law firm of Wilmer and Lee, phone number 256-479-3020. That's 256-479-3020. And tell him you heard about it on the Right Side Radio. And now I got to do the thing. Okay, catch my breath. No representation made the quality legal service be performed great with quality legal service for other lawyers. Or something like that.
Something along those lines.
All right, text lines are already going, man. Some of y'all are just amazing. Let's see here. Scott from Somerville says, Joe Biden's greatest accomplishments. Jimmy Carter did not die as the worst president in history. Yes, it's true. So, yeah, that... That is the thing. With Jimmy Carter, you haven't heard, just passed away last night. And they are saying that he got to live to see someone be basically, you know, worse than him. Steve from Harvest says, I knew somebody would do this. I knew they'd do it. Yeah. I knew it. Ford. I knew as soon as I said Ford first on race day, somebody else would go, Ford, found on roadside dead. Fixer repair daily. Fast only rolling downhill. Forward backwards means driver returns on foot. Okay. Yeah. All right. Nonetheless, it does not change the fact that the 70 Mach 1 is like one of my dream cars. So there. How about that? Alif Mathen says, well said, Colonel. I think that's perfectly stated balance that makes America, America. We are a land of immigrants. We're uniquely American. And we are hopefully humble enough to recognize there might be others who need to join us in the dream. Fair enough. Thank you. Jim from Athens says, my first car was a 68 Fastback Plymouth Barracuda. Oh, yeah, with a 318. Wish I had it now. I believe you, brother. John from Brownsboro says, Von Braun was forced to work on the V-2 missile programs with the Germans. He refused to make weapons once we emancipated him from his home country. He was focused on space and getting to the moon. It was the other Germans, Einstein and Oppenheimer, that provided the impetus to create cease hostilities with their nuclear work. Fair enough. And then Lisa from Tanner says, Phil, your daily monologues are so good. I wonder if you've considered posting them to Substack. I believe it'd be a great platform to reach the Right Side Radio audience. And you know what? Thank you, Lisa. And there is an effort underway right now to put a bunch of them into book form. But thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right, more texts and a quick update from Alif Mathens here momentarily. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation and soon to be our northern neighbor, Tennessee. I'm talking about Alabama and Tennessee together. I'm talking about Right Side's also going to Chattanooga. That's coming up real soon. So y'all stay tuned. We'll be opening up the floodgates in Chattanooga here in the next couple of weeks, and we're pretty excited about it. In the meantime, just know this. If you are a 101.1 Right Side ruffian out of Birmingham, that will be changing. All right? We went through contract renegotiations with our station out of Birmingham, 101.1, Crawford Broadcasting, and decided at the end of it all that we were just best off saying thank you, but we've enjoyed being with you for 2.5 years, but we're going to move on. And so, we'll be coming off 101.1. It does not mean you can't get the show, though. It doesn't matter. I mean, our listening area is already still pretty much the same. But what I'm saying is this. If you're used to hearing us on 101.1, you can still get us on other channels. But you can also stream the show live anywhere in the big, wide world by going to the World Wide Web. And just go to rightsidemedia.org. You can go to Rumble. You can go to YouTube. You can go to Twitter, X, all of it. We're on there, and we're live streaming audio and video daily. That's how Charlene listens to the show, is on her phone. So anyway, just check it out. And if you do go to one of those platforms, here's my request. It would mean a lot to us. We are a growing business. Right Side Media is the company. Right Side Radio is one of our productions. It would mean a lot if you would hit subscribe or like or follow, whichever the case may be, on your various platforms, because that is the way we're allowed to do more on those platforms. Anyway, check it out. I mean, you guys really took us over the edge on YouTube. We're well over 1,000 subscribers now, and we'd love to keep getting more. So we would appreciate it very much.
And by the way, like I've said this before, it's not just the live stream on the YouTube. It's content from each show that's get pulled out into shorts, or I pull out his monologue from time to time. So yeah. You're not just getting that. You're also getting content, you know, if you somehow miss the show, they can go back and rewatch. So
yeah, absolutely. Thanks, man. Yeah, JP's doing an amazing job putting together the content and bringing it to other ways to look at it. All right, that being said, let me jump on over to something that's not part of the Dippers, but it's super important. So, listen, Our ruffian community in Athens had a rough time this weekend. Tornado, it appears now, they're categorizing, I believe it was an EF1, did touch down in roughly downtown Athens, you know, in the beautiful square area. Well, I reached out right away to our friend Alif Mathens, got an update from her yesterday, and I said, well, hey, how about you calling in on Monday and let's update the audience. So on the line right now, my friend Alif Mathens, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm actually parked outside the backside of my office, and there's still heavy equipment moving back and forth. I'm pleased to announce that my office did not get touched, but when that 150-year-old oak tree and the magnolia tree came down, the branches were literally just a few feet from the front of the office, which is actually on the square.
Yeah.
But we're in good shape despite everything.
Well, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I saw the damage, and you couldn't tell from the pictures I was seeing on like Facebook and online, but the downtown area, I mean, it really did smack things around a bit. And I know the Veterans Museum took some knocks, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Backing up to the downtown core, we have had storms certainly before, but they've always been straight line.
Yeah.
This was the first time, and understand, I'm quoting people who said this to me. This is the first time that anybody remembers that there's actually been a tornado in the downtown core. But as you said, it was an EF1 with winds of around 100 miles an hour.
Wow.
And, oh my, there are stories, as there always are with storms in Alabama, there are stories of miracles. One, I think this one is my favorite. There's a young lady that works at, there's a very nice billiard, very family-friendly billiard place that's right there on the east side of the square. And she had come out to go get in her car. She finished out her shift, and it was late. And she came out, and it started to just rain cats and bats like you're standing, you know, with your clothes on under a shower. And so she stepped back for a second under the awning, and that was when the tree came down and it landed on her car.
Wow.
If she had walked out as she had planned to get into her car, she probably wouldn't be with us. And
wow,
the picture of her, you know, rather than looking bummed, she's got this big grin on her face. And I'm telling you, Colonel, the attitude of people that go to "we can help, what can we do" spirit that we thankfully always see after storms, I mean, it is in full swing here, sir.
Yeah, well, and I expect no less from a community like Athens. I mean, this is one of those kind of tight-knit communities that seems to always kind of have something going on, but in a good way, I mean. But so let me ask you this real quick. I know that you are the owner and publisher of Athens Now. You've been sort of checking on things, I'm sure, and running things to ground. What are you hearing from local leadership? Are they going to have to declare an emergency or ask for a declaration of emergency from the federal government? What are they going to do?
Yes, I can answer that question. I realized I didn't answer your first question with regard to the Veterans Museum.
Oh, yeah.
I came down here last night right around sunset, wanted to be, you know, out of the way, and I did park away a couple blocks from the museum and walked over to see it firsthand. That very cool helicopter, of course, is, I don't think that it can be salvaged. It was a mess. But a lot of the fencing that goes along the south and the east portion of the new Veterans Park, I think will be able to be salvaged. What I found most interesting is that of the three tall flagpoles, there's one that has the Vietnam MIA flag on it. There's one that has the American flag, and there's one that has the Alabama flag on it. All three of the flagpoles are standing. From the prior street side, if you look at the American the American flagpole, it's leaning a little touch to the left. But as I told my husband Steve this morning on the phone, but like, honey, if you're inside the parking lot looking south, it's leaning a little bit to the right.
Yeah,
but the
go.
Point is, the American flag pole survived, and I think it'll be able to be straightened out and put back in place. I'm a member of BNI, Business Network International, and our Limestone Leaders group meets inside of the museum. We're not going to be able to be there for a couple of weeks, but I did ascertain that as far as the museum itself and all of the things that are on display and the exhibitions, the museum's in good shape. And that's
good.
That's really good, because there are things in there that go back to the Revolutionary War and they could not be replaced.
No,
so,
absolutely.
Yeah, it's a mess. But as always, things have been happening that are in the positive. As far as the state of emergency is concerned, I did have a chance to interview Mayor Ronnie Marks this morning. He has a column just like you do, sir.
Thank you.
In each edition of Athens Now. And the way the protocol works, my understanding is that actually the governor has to declare a state of emergency.
Gotcha.
And so as of this morning, that had not happened yet because an assessor had not come out. And I don't know, you know, what the protocol is or the kinds of benchmarks that they have to have. But I do know that Mirvani was especially concerned about businesses. Yes. I mean, when I was in his office, Representative Danny Crawford called Congressman Dale Strong. It actually been boots on yesterday. Senator Katie Britt had called and reached out. And their first thought, understandably, is the Vets Museum, because it is such a treasure. And Mayor Ronnie said, and, you know, we also need to remember that there are businesses here where people, you know, that go back generations, people have built their businesses on, and some of them very well may not recover. So that is certainly a concern on his heart. A couple other things. Well, CEI Bookstore is a Christian bookstore. I have a rack there. And when I came down last night, I saw that my Athens Now rack was kind of splattered across the front door, which did not break out as far as the winds were concerned. But it's a mess in there. And, you know, it wouldn't have been the end of life as we know it if my Athens Now interior rack got scooped up, you know, in the cleanup. But what ended up happening was I came down again this morning, and lo and behold, Lance Taylor, who is the owner of CEI, happened to show up, and he leaned through the yellow disaster tape, and he unlocked the front of the store and leaned down and picked up my Athens Now rack. And so it was not a casualty, and I'm very thankful.
Well, good. Well, listen, we're about to go now, but I'm glad you're well. And my understanding is there are no known injuries, just lots of
Correct.
Property damage and down trees and sort of a mess. But it's going to be recoverable, right?
Yes, sir. And most of the power outages have been restored. One last thing, the tree, of course, that fell. There's going to be a grassroots, totally from the private sector, fund to get a large tree to replace it. So it's not going to be like a little Bradford pear sapling kind of thing. They want to find a tree that can actually be transplanted and has a huge root ball, kind of like what they did for Judge Horton's house when they moved it down to Decatur. They also moved the tree that was near the house.
Wow.
So it can be done, and that's in the works.
Well, good deal. Allie, thanks so much for updating us. And like I said, I'm glad you're well. I'm glad your office is well. And the folks of Athens, we love y'all. And anyway,
thank you, sir.
Glad to have you on call so I can check.
Okay, thank you much.
All right, see ya. Well,
there
you have it.
Bye-bye.
Listen, there you have it. I mean, it's really something. I mean, it's not often, it feels like it, not often anyway, that you see like the old downtown square of town get hit by a tornado anywhere. But there it is. And that massive, no telling how old that oak tree was on the courthouse commons right there is downed. And anyway, we're thankful that that things were not worse than what they were. All right, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to take a clean break right here. We'll take the break. We'll come right back. I'm going to jump into a few more text messages because y'all are apparently you got some backlog of texting built up. 833-687-4448. That's 833-68-RIGHT. Phil Williams. Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Hey, by the way, John from Huntsville, you might want to go ahead and text Dale on it. You see that? All right. So apparently our WVNN affiliate out of Huntsville is having some technical difficulties. So hopefully they can get that squared away pretty soon. Don't forget, you can just find us online, though. Just don't skip a beat. Monroe from Huntsville just texted in. He heard me talking about we're also going to be on in our state to the north. He said, I thought you meant Canada, our 51st state.
That's good. I don't think Trudeau would have us.
Whoop, whoop. Monroe might just win the texters for the day. What else I got? I'll tell you what, let me get a few more just because you guys are great. Mike from Florence says, Mike from Florence says they were both in denial about it, but at least I know a couple of people that trained people on H-1B visas to take their jobs. I warned them that's what's likely going on. If my friends didn't have the needed skills, why would they be training those that did? It was about cheap labor. So that's an issue. And that, Mike, you're not wrong, man. That was an issue just, what, during the Trump administration last time, TVA, I don't know if you remember this or not. TVA announced they were going to lay off 200 American workers, and they were bringing in 200 foreign workers, engineers of the same level of skill, but they were willing to come here and work for less, and they were going to make the outgoing 200 employees, Americans, train their replacements, which is just like, that's like saying, would you please dig your own grave so we can do the mass shooting and you all fall in it and save us having to dig? Well, that's just asinine. And the Trump administration weighed in, and my recollection was they decided that, legally speaking, TVA is not a true governmental entity over which the president had actual authority. But he did have authority over members of the board of TVA because they got federal appointments. And so he began firing board members one at a time until they finally woke up and changed their policy. And I want to say that Walt Disney World tried to do the same thing. Listen, Mike, it's a mess, man. H-1B, we gotta fix a broken system, but I say we don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
It needs reformed, not abolished.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
It needs oversight, too. David from Bucky's, he says, I missed the whole storm. I slept through it. No tornado warning was issued as the tornado was on the ground for only 5 minutes. Any warning issued would have been too late. Yeah, I did see that. In fact, I meant to read an article. I think James Spann put one up about why there was no warning, but I think it was because you're right. It was a spot tornado or a flash tornado.
So my meteorologist brother explained that it was between radar scans. So like it was so fast, it was like on the initial radar scan, it didn't have it, and before the next radar scan is what kind of when it happened and it went away in time. So it was like it was late because the radar, you know, it was that fast. It was in between radar scans was the explanation I heard. So
we actually do have a meteorologist in the family. It's
yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who, by the way, I remember him watching the Weather Channel when he was like three.
Yeah, I've seen videos of him like doing like the weather on the green screen when he was like five, like a fake one. Yeah,
it's awesome. He knew what he wanted to do from an early age. Jeff from Athens says, "Hey Phil, it was so windy here in Athens that a chicken laid the same egg four times." What? I don't know what to do with that. Okay, Joe from Athens says, "Thank you for highlighting our beautiful historic town." Thank you, Joe. Chef Ben from Aniana says, Chef Ben and Kenton present, subscribed, ready to get rough like a true ruffian. Thank you, Chef Ben. Appreciate y'all very much. Bruce from Springville. He says, my best car in my early Navy years was an 81 Camaro Sport Coupe. Yeah. Midnight blue in color with T-tops. Yes, there were T-tops. Last year, the real Camaros, he says. Sweet. Navy Phil from Athens says, first on race day, those Chevys couldn't keep up with awesome Bill's T-birds. So they implemented the restrictor plate. That's exactly right. And oh, by the way, just go back and look at some of the things that NASCAR had to change because of Ford. Thank you very much. Of course, there was the Plymouth Superbird, which, you know, a whole different story. Richard Petty. Big tall wing, front pointed nose, aerodynamics, learned how to draft. Next thing you know, they banned him. That's too good. We can't have that. Steve from Harvest said, with regards to first on race day and all that, he says, no offense intended and no need to read this on the air, but I'm reading it anyway. He said, my first four cars were a 72 Chevelle SS454, a 71 Ford Maverick, a 67 SS396, and a 76 Maverick. Man. Said the Fords are daily drivers while I work to hop up the Chevys. Dude, that's a fine set of rides you got right there. All right, last one. Jeff from Athens says, oh, yeah, I had a Bandit TA back when. Yeah. Listen, man, there's some car guys out there. And everybody remembers their first car.
Yeah.
Everybody remembers their first car. All right, listen, we're going to jump into this topic here in a minute, the H-1B visa. So I gave the analogy a while ago of Shohei Ohtani playing baseball for the Dodgers. Was I on the money or not? Your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, pretty much, yeah. I mean, people are already calling him the greatest baseball player ever. And I think that's a good analogy for the grand scheme of things, you know, not just sports but jobs in general. I think people get confused the immigration, like illegal immigration and immigration that helps the country. The immigration that literally built America. So, yeah. Like, if we can get people like Shohei to come and be, you know, the greatest athlete, then imagine, like, how that can translate. Like, we can get Elon from Africa who comes and is, like, probably the smartest man on planet Earth, and now he's a U.S. citizen because of that, you know? So I think that's a great analogy on the grand scheme of things, so.
Well, there's more to unpack here. There are problems. I'm not going to deny it, and I'm absolutely not. But there's absolutely a fix. And you just don't, in my opinion, throw the whole program out because we're worried about what's happening on the southern border, because it's as apples and oranges. All right, coming up, we got more on this. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh, yeah, like the dude just said, solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to hour number two on a Meatloaf Monday. So I'm in this first dipper, H-1B, and if you missed my monologue about this, I encourage you to go listen to it again. You can find it on any one of our podcasting sources like, you know, Apple iTunes or Spotify or Podbean or whatever else. But yeah, we always, and also on YouTube.
It's up on the playlist right now, actually, so if you can go check it out.
Dang, JP. Already?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I'd do without you pushing the buttons, man. All right, so JP's already got it out there. Anyway, the whole monologue was called, if I had to give it a title, I call it H-1B Visa, Hijinks or Highlights. Hijinks or Highlights. And that's where we are. So what's this fight about? If you may have heard that there's conservatives are backlash and then the consternation and everybody's at war with each other. No, we're not. Not really. Not really. Is there a disagreement? Yeah. I mean, when's the last time you ever saw the family gather for Thanksgiving and somebody didn't have an opinion about something else that was different than what the other person had? I mean, the bottom line is a family that works together is going to be a family that sometimes finds disagreement. And in this particular case, we have a situation where the H-1B visa is creating a bit of controversy only because, A, some don't understand it, B, some are willing to abuse it, and C, there are those in the middle who say it's okay to have it, just quit trying to mess it up. So what H-1B visa? Just to remind you again real quick, an H-1B visa, it's a special kind of visa that allows for employers to hire people from another country if those people fall into certain categories, like there's special science, medical, basically there's different exceptions. And they have to also, by the way, be people who come with advanced degrees and knowledge and specific skill sets that the employer has to certify that they are having trouble finding in the U.S. Now, it doesn't mean they're not in the U.S., but picture this. Let's say you need a nuclear physicist. I'm making this up. But let's say you need a nuclear physicist. I don't know for a fact, but I imagine there's not a lot of good nuclear physicists out there. In the event that you need a nuclear physicist, you might immediately put out something on Indeed or on, you know, LinkedIn or some other place. You know, I'll call, need a nuclear physicist for a job in California. There might be some great nuclear physicists who work at a plant in, I don't know, pick one, some sunny Florida where things are wonderful and the tax base is low. And they have no desire whatsoever to move to California, where the politics are different and everything's, you know, kind of ups and downs and topsy-turvy and taxes are high. I'm making all this up, but you see my thinking? yes, there could be a qualified nuclear physicist American citizen who has no desire to move to the job. Well, then what? Do they stop needing a nuclear physicist? No. Are they only allowed to hire an American? What if the Americans don't want that job? Or what if, just saying, what ifs, they're actually having trouble finding one through the usual means? And then they find out there's some guy who works in, pick a spot, Poland. And he's sharp as a tack, speaks four languages. He's got a degree from the University of Warsaw, and he's a qualified nuclear physicist. And he's willing to move to California. Are they not supposed to hire him? That's the thing we've got here. The H-1B visa program was designed to allow for American products, American services, American research, American medicine to be the best in the world because we're able to go out and recruit the best in the world to come here and work in it. The example that I gave, one of the examples I gave in my monologue, was baseball player Shohei Ohtani. Now, I realize it's baseball. But no one can deny that Shohei Ohtani is the most prolific baseball player in the world. He is absolutely, bar none, right now on par with anybody in history in baseball. Baseball's an American sport. He now plays for the LA Dodgers. Did they give him an American citizen's job? No, because nobody could play it like Shohei Ohtani. They got him from Japan, and they're paying him mega bucks. And guess what? They went to the World Series, and he was the MVP. Are you going to find another Shohei Ohtani in America? Doubtful. Might there be one out there? Maybe. But the LA Dodgers couldn't find it, and they found Shohei Ohtani, and they brought him in from Japan. Should they have not? You find me, the LA Dodgers fan who thinks it was a mistake. They ain't one. They ain't one nowhere to be found. Now, there might be some Braves fans or some Yankees fans who think this is a rigged system. They all, Shohei Ohtani needs to go home. Okay, ain't gonna happen. What?
Why'd you look at me when you said that?
I know who I'm working with. So the reality is this. There is a system in place through the H-1B application process. And by the way, it's capped. And therein lies part of the controversy. The cap right now is at $65,000 that can be allotted per year. They call it the lottery. You apply, and they've got a certain number of allocations within the categories that are allowed, and you're legally limited to 65,000 H-1Bs a year, and there can be 20,000 more on top of that, 85,000, if you have advanced degrees. Like, it's not just they got a bachelor's, but they've got, like, I don't know, maybe they're a board-certified neurosurgeon, and you want that for your hospital or your research center or something. All I'm saying is there's a cap on it right now, and the discussion had been, and this is part of the controversy, that there was a call on social media to lift the cap. All right, that seemed unnecessary. No one can say right now that we need more than 85,000 H-1B visas with a straight face. This is not the southern border. Do not confuse the southern border and or conflate the southern border with the H-1B visa program, because the H-1B visa program is an application process for a temporary opportunity to work in the United States because a U.S. employer has said they'll put you to work. And you're going to come here and be gainful and pay taxes, and you're going to be in the system, and you're going to be known, and you're going to be law-abiding, and you bring something, you bring some merit. This is not Nicaraguan jails that are flushing out their you know, or Venezuelan jails that are flushing out their Tren de Aragua gang members and sending them north to the southern border where they can come across and make, you know, mayhem and violence. This is not that. This is not millions and millions of illegal immigrants sneaking across the Rio Grande and finding their way to New York City and getting free debit cards and telephones and medical care and food. This is not that at all. Do not conflate the two. Now, the problem we got is the Democrats have so abused the immigration system and have so abused the U.S. public for daring to question their abuse of the immigration system that we're now suspect of anything that says immigration. But I'm here to tell you that the H-1B visa program has had problems and they have to get fixed. I've got a story here. Let me find this one. I pulled this off of, I think it was Fair U.S. Yeah, Fair U.S. I went there because I knew they would talk about it. Fair U.S., which is the Foundation for American Immigration Reform. FairUS.org has a piece that came out in August of 2019. That's, by the way, that's the Trump administration, 2019, saying that H-1B visas were too often cheap foreign labor versus American workers. And that's the problem. They cite the fact that, look at this. Where was it? It was in, was it Disney? Yes. Page 5 of the report that I've got from FairUS.org. Disney World in 2015. Disney World. Disney. For the love of God, Disney. Disney World decided to replace many of its skilled American employees with foreign H-1B workers and then force the Americans to train their replacements. What? That's just abusive, man. That's just like, that's psychological abuse on top of losing the job. You're okay, how about, where was, I have another story, and it was TVA, and I said it earlier, but by the way, TVA, their their plan was to let people go at Christmas. At Christmas. This was a tweet. Was it? Yeah, here it is. I got it right here. I pulled this off of a guy's Twitter post who gave a full string of what happened. So when Trump's first administration was ongoing, TVA announced at Christmas of 2018 that they were going to fire 200 Americans, 200, right at Christmas, and have them train their replacements on the way out. Wow. They did it despite the fact that TVA is a government agency, not as a non-governmental agency, is not a true governmental agency. The president does not appoint the leadership of TVA, but the president does appoint members of the board. So the president began to hold the TVA board members responsible and began firing board members one at a time. Sooner or later, TVA woke up and said, oh, sorry, we'll pull back on our plans. Those two, TVA and Disney, are now the classic examples of the abuse of the H-1B. There was no reason for Disney to say, yeah, let's fire a whole batch of people. Let's do a reduction in force, but we're going to fill it with cheap foreign labor. TVA had no reason to fire 200 Americans at Christmas time and then say, we're going to make them train their replacements. That, my friends, is an abuse. That is why people go to jail. And that, by the way, if you Google right now, if you Google H-1B visa abuse news, you'll find stories that are as recent as November of this year with organizations, employer organizations, filling out false requests for H-1B visa approval, citing people with advanced skill degrees who don't really have the advanced skill degrees just to get them over here so they can do indentured servitude and get cheap labor out of them. Those folks need to go to jail. That's where the problem lies, not in the ideals for which the H-1B was first built. I got to take a break. I'm going to take the break right now. When I come back, we'll just wrap this thing up because there's not much more to say. But I will tell you this. Elon Musk, I have agreed with him on 99% of what he said in the last couple of years. But he got a little out of hand, in my opinion, on this one with his retorts to people. Got a little bit gamey. We'll talk about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. By the way, coming up in the next few minutes, right after the next break, we'll have State Republican Party Chairman John Wall calling in. We'll talk to him about what to expect next. But hey, wrapping this up, I got a text here from Bob from Madison regarding the H-1B visa program. He said, I think the system has been abused because it's not just extra special people like nuclear physicists, but it could be up to like IT people and things like that. And we got plenty of qualified people here in the United States. And I agree with you, Bob. That's why I think the reforms need to be, A, we take a look at who's been abusing it and put some stiff penalties in there that may be stiffer than what they have now. And B, make the approval process subject to a little more scrutiny so that we know that they're truly bringing in someone and certifying that they can't find anybody else to do the job. Because you're right. If they're just bringing in, you know, someone who can check with you to see whether you've rebooted or not. That's why do we need that? We can do that here. But if it's truly somebody with some skill sets, a Werner von Braun again, then I'm all for it. Gary from Decatur says, how about the government funding scholarships and grants for advanced degrees in science and technology versus arts and humanities to fill those jobs? We got enough social justice graduates for the next 20 years. Yeah, I don't know what to tell you on that, man. You still got to qualify to pursue the advanced degree in science and technology. So if they're qualified for it, by the way, I don't want the government funding the scholarships. That's called a Pell Grant. But I want the universities who have these massive endowments to start funding these scholarships. Well, they do, but you know what I'm saying? More than that. I'm tired of government-backed student loans for underwater basket weaving degrees and anyway, all of it. If there's a merit-based scholarship out there that puts more people in the STEM category, the science, technology, and math, then bring it. Elon Musk got a bit gamey on this one. So Musk basically just said things that I'm not allowed to say on the radio. His response to people questioning this, he said, the reason I'm in America, along with so many critical people who built SpaceX, Tesla, and hundreds of other companies that made America strong, is because of H-1B. He says, so take a big step back and blankety blankety blank, and I'll go to war on this issue, the likes of which you cannot possibly comprehend. I mean, take a breath, Elon. Seriously, just why was that even needed? if you're that touchy on the subject, then did we just disagree with you for the first time? And truthfully, I don't think anybody is saying bail on the program. It's bad. I think what they're saying is fix it.
Well, a lot of people on X are. I say a lot of people. There's some people on X that are being nasty about it. So
there are people on X that will cuss you out because of what you had for breakfast.
Yeah,
let's be honest. Mm. Social media is the place where people get keyboard courage and they say things they would never say to your face.
Mm-hmm. So I think that was towards those people in general. But yeah, he snapped for sure.
Yeah. Ramaswamy also got real engaged with it, saying, and Ramaswamy, how did he word it? He said something to the effect, and I've got to hear in one of mine, that he said that America has too often allowed mediocrity to replace exemplary opportunity and behavior.
He said something of like American culture doesn't value academia enough. It's something like, you know, the TV shows and culture rewards like the prom queen instead of the valedictorian, that sort of thing, and said that cultures, you know, in other places in the world that reward that from a young age maybe have some people who are better equipped to have some jobs that Americans aren't equipped to have. Like, he said it in some way like that, and people really went after him for it. But I mean, in a lot of senses, he's not really wrong. And he was saying he wants to return America to when it was like that and did value academia. He wasn't, you know, bashing America as a whole. He was saying he wants to see a return to that. But yeah, he got a lot of heat for that.
Yeah, he did. And I found the article. It was Daily Wire is where I read it. Daily Wire has a piece came out yesterday, Ramaswamy saying that American culture has venerated mediocrity over excellence for way too long. He went on to say that achievement over normalcy, excellence over mediocrity, nerdiness over conformity, hard work over laziness. What he's basically saying is there's nothing. Well, Nikki Haley used it as a chance to swipe back at him, saying you're talking about the American worker, but the reality is what he was saying was, let's don't forget that what we have too often allowed ourselves as a nation to get dumbed down. I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I do know this. Our culture has had it soft for a while, and I miss the days when we had people that were considered the pillars of society because they were putting a man on the moon, or because they were launching the nuclear program, because they were doing things that no one had ever done before. I'm ready to get back to the America that leads the world in massive advances in science and technology. But nonetheless, the H-1B visa program, call me wrong, I don't think I am. I think the H-1B visa program is rife with abuse, and it can be fixed, and it is not at all to be mixed with the southern border. That's two different things. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, Alabama, and soon to be Tennessee, as we go live in Chattanooga here in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, Right Side Radio going to be a multi-state, and we appreciate the fact that we get a chance now to reach out to a Northwest Georgia, North or Southeast Tennessee, Northeast Alabama regional mix. I mean, it's gonna be great. Chattanooga, WGOW out of Chattanooga, coming up real soon. Hey, listen, we're going to switch gears. I'm in number two of the Triple Dipper. I'm just calling this the Now What. I mean, Now What? I don't know about y'all, but I am so glad that 2024 is over, personally. I'm actually glad the whole last 4 years is over. But we've got a couple more weeks to go. Things are still happening. Biden's still pushing out billions for Ukraine. He's still trying to pay off student loan debts. It's madness. He's still vacationing right now in St. Croix, believe it or not. But what can we expect coming up pretty soon? And I thought, you know what? Who better to talk to us about that than John Wall, chairman of the Alabama Republican Party. And he's on the line right now. Chairman Wall, how are you doing?
I am doing well. It's good to be on the show.
Well, we're glad to have you. Thanks for making time. By the way, I know you live in the Athens area. I guess everything okay with you since the tornado the other day?
No, you know, I was west of the track of the storm. But yeah, I was actually going around the courthouse area yesterday, looking at the, you know, going over some of the damage with some of the elected officials. And I'll tell you, it is so sad, some of the historical aspects there. But very thankful there was not a loss of life. You know, in the broad scheme of things, Athens was very lucky, especially with no warning. But everything well here, and ask for everyone's prayers for those who are suffering damage up here in Athens.
Well, yeah, I'm glad to hear you were there and walking the ground. Thank you for doing that. All right, so let me ask you this. Are you glad 2024 is over?
You know, I really am. This has been a year. It's hard for me to believe we're already at the end. I want to highlight the fact that remember this year, for all those listening, this election cycle will be talked about in political history classes and political science classes for hundreds of years. I think this is probably one of the most historic cycles that we've ever seen, whether it was the drama on the Democrat side, switching their nominee, President Trump coming back for a second term, not back-to-back, only the second president in the history of our country to do that. There's so many nuances and so many things. But I think as I look back over 2024, I am absolutely glad to have it done. I am tired. I'm ready for a break. But I'm also proud of what we accomplished. What we accomplished as a state party here in Alabama, raising Alabama's profile, the first ever presidential primary debate, hosting presidential candidates. But what really has me motivated to keep working hard is that I think the American people sent a message November 5th. And that message was the status quo is over. The American people want to change. They want a government that puts them first. American first is not just a talking point. This is what the American people want. They want a government that is smaller, more efficient, doesn't spend as much money, does not try to control their lives, and that makes a priority defending their rights and freedoms and helping them have a safer and more successful life. And I think that gives me hope for the future.
Well, I agree. In fact, here in a little while, I'm going to switch to a third dipper. I'm calling it the end of an era because there are some who are saying that what we just passed through was a second, what they call progressive era, and that the progressive era is coming to a close with the election of Donald Trump and the mandate. And we're even seeing it on a worldwide scale in many ways. We're seeing a shift to the right in global politics. But let me ask you this. So Chairman Wall, who also happens to be in leadership at a regional level for the Republican Party, what can we expect? I mean, what do you and I mean, not just like things are going to be better, which I think they are, like what can we expect in a practical sense? What do you expect to see happen in the first 100 days, maybe even the first day of the Trump administration?
Oh, I mean, look, this is the question, right? And I think it actually ties into the finishing thought we just had, which is there is a shift. The American people want change. And I think, you know, this was a referendum on the policy of the Democrat Party, of the wokeness, of the out-of-control spending, out-of-control nanny state, putting people back in charge. But in order for that, that was not just a referendum on Democrats. That's also a referendum on Republicans.
Yeah.
Because the American people have told us what they want. And now it's our job, it's our elected officials, need to have a backbone, need to fight for the American people, and need to actually deliver on their promises.
Yeah.
And that's going to be the key over the next 2 years. We'll get to the midterms, but also the next 4 years. So I think we're going to see, you know, there's going to be some docking. You know, what does come out of this initial start? Is it the American first Trump agenda? Or is it something else? Is the establishment try to make a hold? And I think we're going to see a lot of interesting things happen before Donald Trump actually takes the oath of office on January 20th. We got, you know, some other speaker's race coming up, the different things coming that are going to define our government far past just Donald Trump. And I think we're in for a very interesting time frame. We're going to see very quickly. I think you're going to see a lot of executive orders day one from Donald Trump. You're going to see, you know, things on the border, actually some serious efforts to control illegal immigration and to keep America safe in that area. I think that's going to be one of the main policies you see day one. You're going to see some other stuff with tariffs day one, and really making sure that we're getting a fair deal on the global the global scale. We've been being ripped off for years, especially by China.
Absolutely.
And I know there's debate over the best way to address that, but I think keeping our head in the sand and not addressing it at all is absolutely the wrong approach. And so I'm fascinated to see what that, what those immediate responses are. But well, I think those are two areas we're going to see action day one.
I think they're. I mean, I think day one is going to be very gamey. I think it's going to be like serious business. And I think more so than we even saw with the Biden administration, with a stack of executive orders. I think we're going to see executive orders and policy rollouts on day one with Trump. But here's the thing, John. I'll just say this: having been a card carrying Republican for a number of years, a member of the state party, a county party leader. And an elected official myself, I say all that to say, a lot of times Republicans get in our own way. We wind up having fighting over the minutia so much so that we lose the big picture sometimes. Like the fight over Obamacare, we couldn't get it repealed when we had the chance. Now Speaker Johnson's race may be one of the first tests of the new Republican, band of brothers, so to speak. Can they get past that point? Trump came out and endorsed Mike Johnson today for re-election. Some say it's only because he doesn't want the distraction of a speaker's race during his first 100 days. I don't know. What are your thoughts? Is Mike Johnson going to survive the vote this coming week, or is it going to be okay?
You know, that in my opinion, is one of the biggest questions asked. I don't think he makes the first vote. Now, I'm not saying he does not stay speaker. But I think there are going to be enough congressmen who vote against him to take it to a second ballot. And I say that because there's also political strategy with any committee type vote. I know we've already seen at least one congressman, Congressman Massey, say he's not going to be voting for him. It only takes three. And so with that in mind, you may see no votes just to say, okay, let's set up some new policies. So let's make sure we actually make a priority on cutting spending. I think most likely Speaker Johnson does eventually get the votes, but, and I could be completely wrong here, I think it's not on the first ballot. And that's just my prediction, kind of looking at the lay of the land as we have it right now. It's very, very hard in today's political culture to get a vote, to only have three votes needed to stop it in the first round. I think it will be there. And the Democrats are not going to bail him out on a vote for Speaker. And I think that takes this definitely to a very interesting position. And that's going to be the main story, I think, headed to next week. He has been close to Donald Trump. He was traveled with him a lot final weeks of the campaign. That endorsement does not surprise me. And I think it does go past just he doesn't want distractions. I think Speaker Johnson has been courting his support for months. And it's going to be interesting if that support can hold.
Well, all right. So that being said, what do you know about Alabama's delegation? I mean, we have... I can think, and you don't have to name names you don't want to, but I know that Barry Moore is a member of the Freedom Caucus. I know that Gary Palmer has been in leadership most recently and is looking at some good appointments coming up. I know that we've got some seniority with Mike Rogers and Robert Adderholt. I don't expect anything out of Terry Sewell. But what are we expecting from the Alabama delegation on the vote? Do you have any indication that any Alabamians are going to wind up going one way or the other?
You know, I think right now all of Alabama's votes will probably go for Mike Johnson. Okay. That would be my suspicion. I think the possible defectors are going to be the people that you saw that voted against the budget. It's not the budget. Let me get the wording right. The continuing resolution on the budget.
Right.
The folks who voted no, the congressmen who voted no on that, I think are your most likely to vote no on or to vote for a different candidate on the speaker's race. And we saw all of Alabama's representatives vote yes on that continuing resolution. So I would expect all of Alabama's congressmen at this point to vote with Speaker Johnson.
Well, that's going to be interesting to see. So Mike Johnson's got a great pedigree. I mean, his work with Alliance Defending Freedom as a constitutional lawyer, his time as a member of the Freedom Caucus, I believe. But all that to say, he's got an impossible job right now, having this narrow of a majority, because like you said, it can, all it takes is three, and it can be three. By the way, some people think it's purely on principle. Sometimes it's also purely on politics. They're gaming for something. They're holding back on their vote until they know they're going to get an appointment or something in a bill or whatever else. So no telling what's going on behind the scenes right now.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You're going to have there's three different motivations, right? You got the genuine policy guys who are like, I don't like this. I don't like Speaker Johnson's policies. Then you're going to have the folks, like you said, who may be holding out saying, I want an appointment to be chairman of a subcommittee or a main committee. If you don't agree to give me that position, I'm going to vote no on. And so leadership is an extremely hard place to be in the U.S. House of Representatives. It's going to be very interesting. I think Speaker Johnson's weakest area for me when I'm looking at him is some of the spending. And can he convince the fiscal hawks, you know, the folks who really want to bring down the national budget, really want to cut spending, can he convince them that he's the right guy to vote for Speaker? And will he actually make those hard cuts in the coming months?
Well, I think that's going to be the test. The reality is, though, I'd much rather the test be with us in charge than us not in charge. So,
amen.
So let's go ahead and get that out of the way. I'm just glad 2024 is over with. I'm glad 2025 is upon us. My pastor at Church of the Highlands has named this the year of new beginnings, and I'm looking for it looking for it like right away.
No, you know, so am I, and I think the opportunity is there, and I'm excited if the Republican Party can deliver. And our elected officials can come through on the promises, you know, rebuild the economy, close the border, help people have a better life.
Yeah,
I think there's a very bright future. We have a chance to take this country back.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Chairman John Wall, look forward to talking to you again sometime real soon. But in the meantime, thanks for making time for us today.
Now, always good to be on the show.
All right. See you, man. Well, so you heard it. I mean, I think there's definitely some work to be done. And there's also, I mean, listen, I'm not a fan of Speaker Johnson's most recent effort, or I won't say lack thereof, because I can't imagine the work that went on behind the scenes. I've been in a little bit of political machinations before. I know what it's like trying to get something done when you're people holding out on votes. But nonetheless, I mean, when you went from a 1,600-page bill, spending bill, to a, 150-page spending bill overnight, that meant you could have done it at first. So why did you not do it at first? So there's things like that I look at and go, where was the wisdom? Here's the next question. Who's going to do a better job? Is there somebody who can get the votes that can do a better job without jimmying up the works? Is it Jim Jordan? I think Jim Jordan would be awesome. Is it somebody else, a member of the Freedom Caucus, Andy Biggs? I don't think he can get the votes. Is it Byron Donalds? I like Byron Donalds a lot from Florida, but does he have the experience? So all these things weigh in, and the reality is, here's my thought. My thought is right now, Mike Johnson goes back in, because I am so avidly in favor of the Trump agenda starting on day one that I don't want to see a month of wrangling trying to figure out if anybody can get the votes to be Speaker. I say go in there, beat him up a little bit if you have to, debate openly, call out his weaknesses, maybe hold off on the first vote if you have to, but eventually get it done, and let's get going on the work of the people. And if he can't sustain, once the presidency and the Senate and the House are all in one party, if he can't do the job at that point, he should step down and get somebody else then. But right now, before we even start, that's not when I want to see the engine stalling. All right, we're taking a break right now. We'll come right back. I got plenty more on that. I even got clips from Trey Gowdy and Karl Rove talking about this very thing. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. It will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, dropping truth bombs. That's what we're doing, dropping truth bombs up in here. Hey, by the way, I got to remind you guys, so tomorrow is our last day on 101.1 out of Birmingham. By the way, I will also point out that I have chosen to give the Right Side Media staff tomorrow and New Year's Day off to watch football and be with family and do the things. So tomorrow you will hear replays and best ofs, we call them, with segments from other shows. Just know that. However, those of you that are 101.1 ruffians, We are rolling off of 101.1 after 2.5 years starting after tomorrow. So January 1 is the first day without Right Side Radio playing on 101.1 out of Birmingham. Now, you can still get us out of Huntsville, and soon you can get us out of Chattanooga, and every day you can get us streaming online through a variety of platforms. So here's what I would love for you to do. I'm literally asking you to do it. If you're a 101.1 ruffian, if that's where you've been listening to the show every day, I'd like for you to explore your options, like maybe even right now. Go check us out online. My wife listens to the show on her phone every day because you can stream the show from rightsidemedia.org, our website. You can stream it from YouTube at Rightside Media. You can stream it on two places on X, which is one is at Sin Phil Williams. That's my personal account. Or you can go to Rightside Media's account. You can go to Rumble. You can go to what else? Twitch. We're all over the place. So what I'm saying is go check one of them out. If you go to a platform that has a subscription, you know, or whatever else, just click on it. Like subscribe on YouTube. It does not cost you anything. You just click subscribe. All that does is it signs you up so you'll be able to get to that site quicker next time. And you'll get all the content because on YouTube, we've got not just the show every day. We've also got any number of short videos. We've got four separate other video podcasts. We got all of our stuff up there. Hit subscribe and join the 1,000+ who are already subscribing and just be a part of the Ruffian family forever and ever. Amen. All right, I'm in this number two of the Triple Dipper. I'm calling it Now What? So what should we expect? When I get back from this break, I've got a clip from Trey Gowdy interviewing Karl Rove. Now, I don't care how you feel about Karl Rove. The guy's still smart, and he's got some thoughts on what we should see in the next, 100 days or so. And I'll just tell you, I think that Trump's going to come in and come in hard and fast. Why would he not? I think there are things he's going to be doing with executive orders. I think he's going to roll out a legislative agenda and ask for the House and the Senate to jump on it right away. I think he's going to be looking at foreign policy issues. I think he's going to be looking at socioeconomic and cultural issues. I mean, what might we see in the first 100 days? Well, there are going to be things he can do on day one. He can put out directives. I fully expect that on the cultural side of things, that Trump will declare that the Trump administration will absolutely 100% define male and female as biological male and female at birth. And what that means is it ripples through the government and you do away with all the transgender agenda being filtered through various departments. I really do believe you're going to wind up seeing transgenders being banned from military service. I think so. I think you're also going to see tariffs being put on a number of foreign countries that have trade imbalances with us and do it on purpose. I think you're going to see some stuff happen. And then you're going to see some allies sitting up straighter and some enemies cowering down in the background. We got more on this. I'll tell you all about it. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side Studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national covering down on all the issues. And oh, yeah, like you just said, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Welcome to hour number three on a Meatloaf Monday. Meatloaf Monday. Yes, it is. By the way, every day feels like Friday right now. Have you noticed that? Does it feel that way to you?
Yeah, it's been a weird week.
We're in the twilight zone right now.
I know. I've made quite the number of trips up and down from Huntsville the last week.
Yes, you have.
I'll be making another tonight.
Your car knows the road.
Yeah.
Every day feels like Friday. But you know what? It's Meatloaf Monday, so let's just hang in there. I'm in number two of the Triple Dipper. I'm calling it Now What? And I'm talking about, all right, so we won. The dog caught the bumper of the car. Now what? Now what do we do? Well, the Congress is going to have to get its act together. The leadership vote didn't go the way I would have liked in the U.S. Senate. John Thune is going to be the, Thune, wasn't it Thune? I think it was John. Yeah, John Thune is going to be the Senate Majority Leader. Once the new Senate is seated, the question of who's going to be the Speaker of the House is going to be up for debate and voting this coming Friday. Trump is calling for them to get their act together real quick. Just go ahead and support Mike Johnson. Let's move forward, guys. What he doesn't want to do is have the narrow margins of the House disrupted by a lack of leadership and an inability to start working the legislative agenda on day one. What's going to wind up happening is this. Trump gets sworn in on January 20th. In fact, I happen right now, Charlene and I plan to be there. I'm looking for, I mean, this is a generational opportunity. We were granted the opportunity to be there, and we are stoked. So yeah, plans are being laid right now for I'll be calling in from DC. That being said, Trump's going to get sworn in, and he's going to immediately roll out a legislative agenda, and we need to have a legislative process available for it to happen. There's Mike Johnson, I mean, listen, warts and blemishes notwithstanding, I really do believe that he is probably going to sustain, and I agree with John Wall, who was on a few minutes ago, I really do believe that there's going to be a healthy debate, and I'm for it, a healthy debate on whether or not he botched it on the spending bill most recently. I did not appreciate the way that went down. It was clear to me that when they brought out a 160-page bill, that they didn't ever need the 1,600-page bill that he had brought out at first. And I am so ready to get back to what's called the regular order of business, where they get away from doing continuing resolutions. That being said, all that to say, Mike Johnson does have some good street cred in conservative world, and Trump has endorsed him as of today, saying, please, go ahead, guys, and reconfirm him. Let's move forward, because what you don't need is Democrats sitting back and laughing while the first 100 days is frittered away with Republicans fighting amongst themselves. Let's don't do it. Now, if Mike Johnson has to go later, make him go later. I mean, we had, what, Kevin McCarthy step down. We had Paul Ryan step down. We had John Boehner step down. You can lose a speaker in mid-cycle. You don't have to wait till next year. If he botches things, if it's not going well, if he's not able to herd the cats, then get somebody else. But I don't think we're going to get somebody else this Friday. I think we're going to get through it. And if there's no speaker, then we can't get anything done. You can't bring bills to the floor. You can't move the process forward. You can't get something done. And so what I'm saying, well, I just had grandchildren walk in the studio. Holy cow. Hi. How are you? Come over here and see me. Hang on a second. You guys, I am having a moment because granddaddy is sitting here just loving on the fact that he's got grandbabies. And hey, you, how are you doing? Give me a surprise. Surprise. Here I am. So about came out of my skin when y'all jumped in the studio. How are you guys doing?
We're good.
Good. I'm glad. Hang on. I'm talking to the people, okay? Okay. I'm talking to the people. I got a clip I want to play. JP, we got a clip from, this is Karl Rove on Trey Gowdy's Sunday night show this past Sunday. He's talking about this very thing. What are we going to do next? What are the Republicans going to accomplish? What can we expect as they move into the first 100 days, beginning on day one? And let's play it.
To Sunday Night in America. Both parties have challenges, but Republicans have the challenge of governing while Democrats are trying to figure out how they lost and looking mostly in the wrong places. The great thing about living in a constitutional republic is there's always another election. So your fates can change, but not unless you learn lessons in your defeat. After Barack Obama won, autopsies and epitaphs were written on the GOP, and 2 years later, Obama lost the House. Whatever mandate he had sure didn't last very long. And then Obama created a demand for a very different style of politics, which led to Donald Trump. Very few people predicted when Donald Trump left office in January of 2021 that he would return 4 years later even stronger than when he left. History is not always kind to the party in power. 2 years is what you should plan for, although Trump has defied history before.
2 years.
So how to hit the ground running, and while Democrats are evaluating why they lost, are they even looking in the right places? Are fringe elements drowning out blue state governors capable of winning in red and purple states? Joining us is Fox News contributor Mr. Karl Rove. Welcome. Karl, if you plan on having 2 years, where should the GOP start, and how can they keep this small margin coalesced?
Well, they could start by focusing early next year on things where success is possible and where it's...
Okay, hold it for a second. I want to point something out. So Trey Gowdy's right. Keep in mind, does Trump have a four-year term? Yep. But the party in power is not always in favor within the 2 years. And the narrow margins of the House are so, so slim that it would only take, five, six, seven congresspeople losing their seats in the next election just a mere 2 years from now that would unhinge the ability to get anything done. The bulk of what we have to get done has to happen in the first 2 years. We have to make great strides that can't be unwound by the Democrats if they take the House. I don't think they'll take the Senate, although it's close. I think the next election cycle is actually going to be worse for the Democrats in the U.S. Senate. We've got to get as much done as we can in the first 2 years. That point needs to be just ingrained in our minds. Go.
It's being demanded by the American people. Some of that can be done through the executive, for example, rolling back a lot of the rules and regulations and unnecessary red tape that's burdening American business, particularly small business. But it is going to require action in Congress. So if you look at the political landscape, the thing that they have the best chance of pulling together something and getting it done relatively quickly, meaning within a matter of months, is probably something to do with the border, because even Democrats are now realizing that this is a political problem for them and a huge challenge for the country, and that we better get our act together.
All right, is that where it stopped?
All right, people tend to remember.
All right, go and stop it there. We're going to have another clip on that in a minute, but he's right. What can we do immediately? There's an air of immediacy that has to happen. The people that brought the mandate to the polls need to see something like there's a short-term gratification thing that has to be met. We cannot waste the opportunity. So I think what you're going to see is a variety of things. I think you're going to see a series of executive orders that are deliberative, well thought out, and legally researched, and they're going to be a part of what you've been hearing in the campaign for the last year and a half. I think you're going to literally see day one, you're going to see executive orders on the immigration issue, executive orders on the rebuilding of the wall, executive orders on tariffs being put in place on Mexico. You're going to see remain in Mexico reinstated. I think you're going to see any number of policies that are exactly what he said. I think he's going to also direct that the deportation of illegal immigrants begins immediately and direct all U.S. departments to participate in whatever necessary way to affect that. And by the way, don't think they hadn't thought this through already. That whole deportation thing, the idea that they're saying, well, it's going to be hard, we're still working on, they've got a plan. And I think that plan is going to involve the military. I think it's going to involve ICE. I think it's going to involve DHS. I think it's going to involve state authorities cooperatively. And I think you're going to wind up seeing criminal elements. And I think you're going to see Tom Homan kicking in doors. I do. I think Tom Homan is going to, here's what I bet is going to happen. I bet you're going to see some of the criminal elements like Tren de Aragua, who have been getting a lot of news headlines in places like Aurora, Colorado. I think you're going to see ICE and DHS doing raids on known criminal elements who are here illegally, and I'm going to bet you that Tom Homan is going to come to the press conference. He might even stand outside the door with a vest on, watching them go through the door. You watch. But that's the kind of thing that America needs to see on day one. I think you're going to see, culturally speaking, I think you're going to see, like I said earlier, the transgender agenda is going to get stymied. How amazing would it be for Trump to say that a biological man is born and a biological woman is born and you can't change it. And that's the way the government will act from now on. Now, that shouldn't have to be. But what does it do? I believe it picks a fight. I believe it picks a fight that we have to have. I believe it picks a fight that someone will sue for, because the transgender agenda is so prolific, they'll put money into the fight and get it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court and let it become the law of the land. I think it's going to happen. So there will be executive orders that deal with policy. There'll be executive orders on foreign policy. There will be executive orders stymieing the flow of funds that the checks that are being written here in the final days of the Biden administration. I think you're going to see a curtailing of money to Ukraine. I think you're going to see a curtailing of the use of foreign assets for our energy sector. I think you're going to see a curtailing of money going into the funding of the electric vehicle push and all of those things. I think you're going to see a change in policy in a big way. But then he's going to have a legislative agenda. And we got to talk about that when we get back from the break. But the legislative agenda is key, because what he does with executive order can be undone by the next executive who comes into office. What happens as a matter of law through legislative act is what stays in place, and they have to work harder to unwind it. And that's what we need more of. All right, we're taking a break right now. We'll come right back. Phil Williams, right Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. All right, so we're in number two of the Triple Dipper. It might be a two-dipper day. I don't know yet. We'll see. I got several text messages. Let me catch up on some of those. Brian from Huntsville says, a new year is welcome. He says, my 60th birthday is 21 January. My birthday present is the presidential inauguration on 20 January. Yeah, bro, I am right there with you. I am just 2 months after you on the 60.
I consider it my birthday present as well.
Absolutely. it's a good one to have, right?
It is, yeah.
For those who care about politics, this is quite the birthday.
Yeah, it is.
Either that or it's a spoiler.
last time around it was a spoiler, but this time it's good.
George from Huntsville says, if there's no speaker, then the president does not get sworn in. Actually, it's not the speaker who swears him in. It's a certification of the vote you're thinking of, and I believe they will certify the vote before they get to that point, and that's where the Speaker of the House is in. But there's always a speaker pro tem, and so I think the business of the House can still get done, George. And I think what you're thinking of, like I said, is a certification. The swearing in is done by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. So I don't believe that's going to be an issue. Jeremy from Madison says, Speaker Mike Johnson, was Johnson illustrating that pork was no longer going to be a factor in omnibus bills by bringing the 1,600-page bill before the House? Nope, I don't think so. I think he was showing pork, and I think he was showing way too much deference to Democrats, and that's what got everybody mad. I mean, I think if Speaker Johnson had taken the hardline stance he did and brought the smaller bill on day one and announced why he was doing it and saying that he was not going to put up with this anymore and we're getting back to the regular order of business, I think everybody would have gone, all right, we get it. Now, I understand why we wound up passing a CR this time, but the CRs have got to stop. The continuing resolution process has got to stop. It is not responsible politics. It is not responsible budgeting. It's not the way any of us would run our business or our homes, for that matter. But let's go back to the topic, though. Now what? So the now what? We've got the now what is like the BBC has an article. The BBC has an article that says Trump's going to make people's head spin when he gets into office. I got grandbabies on the radio right now. I can't talk ugly about politics. I got a grandbaby girl back there behind me saying sweet things. All right, you guys. I'll see y'all at the house in a little while. Love you. Bye-bye. All right. Yes, it's a real studio, and yes, family is awesome. I cannot ask for better than this. But Trump says he's going to make heads spin. He did. His team right now, BBC has a BBC? Yes, Phil, the BBC. BBC has an article that came out about a month ago, saying Trump says he will make head spin, which is a quote. He also said that, by the way, he intends his team is preparing a flurry of executive orders. The first week is going to be a flurry of executive orders. Now, what might they deal with? I've got a section here on immigration to the border. I've got a section here on January 6th, and I think that's going to be a thing. Listen, man, I'm not going to be surprised to find that's not something that we don't do away with on day one. January 6th pardons. He did an interview with Kristen Welker. Whew, Kristen Welker. Did an interview with Kristen Welker on Meet the Press. And he told her, he said, I'm going to do it very quickly. He called the convictions, many of them, unfair. He did say that there's going to be a case-by-case basis because he said, in his own words, a few of the people did get out of hand. But the reality is there's a whole bunch of January 6th pardons that I believe could come on day one. I'm not going to be a bit surprised. And I think they should. I think that will also signal the end of an era if we can do that. I think you're also going to see, and this article does speculate, that he will make sure that the Paris Climate Accords are not going to bind us up, that the drill, drill, drill thing that he said he's going to do, that he's going to do. He's going to prioritize U.S. production of oil and gas, and some of that can be done through executive order. I would not be a bit surprised to find the Keystone Pipeline rekindled if indeed the same people who invested in it before are willing to do so again. Why do I say that? Because they're tired of getting beat up by government changing every 4 years. But the media reports right now are that Trump's team is putting together a massive tranche of executive orders and policy positions that you're going to see rolled out. And it's going to be largely what you would hope for. Now, the article I've got here from AP, whew, liberal. What do they do? The first thing they did, it's the AP. They want to know what he's going to do on abortion. What's going to happen on abortion? What do you think is going to happen on abortion? I mean, it's not like the U.S. Supreme Court hadn't already spoken. Trump's going to do away with abortion. What is your fascination with killing babies? But the thing I think you will see, though, is there will be an executive order that repeals any effort by the Department of Defense to give people special leave and compensations to travel out of state in uniform to get an abortion. I think that's gone. I think that's going to happen, like, very quickly. Taxes, I think you're going to see tax cuts on things like earned tips, Social Security wages, overtime, he's going to have tax, but those have to have congressional approval. All right, we get back. I got a little more from Karl Rove, but listen, this is, y'all, the shopping list is so long. Can we get it all done? If we can stop fighting amongst ourselves, yes, we can. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, covering down on some major ground across the northern half of the most beautiful state in the nation. This one, I'm talking about Alabama, y'all. Alabama and, oh, by the way, soon to be Tennessee. I mean, I got to find a whole new way of doing this gig. I mean, I got to be able to describe the states that we're in. But so just so as you know, coming up here in a couple of weeks, we are proud to announce that Right Side Radio goes live on WGOW out of Chattanooga, which is going to have a listening area that takes us into northwest Georgia, all the Chattanooga region of Tennessee, and down into northeast Alabama in sections that we have not been able to reach with our other signals. So this is going to be cool. I am looking forward to it. I will say, though, there's also been a change in our Alabama footprint. So we are rolling off of 101.1 out of Birmingham. Contract negotiations came time. The contract term was about up. In the renegotiation, we decided that the end result was we are better off parting ways. So we are, as of tomorrow's our last day on 101.1 out of Birmingham. If you're a 101.1 ruffian, all you Right Side ruffians out of that 101.1 demographic, just know this. It doesn't matter. We got other announcements coming in the near future if things keep going the way I believe they are. However, in the meantime, you can always go anywhere in the big wide world to the World Wide Web and get us on a variety of places. We stream the show audio and video every day, live. You can see it on rightsidemedia.org. That's our website. You can see it on two places on X or Twitter, at Send Phil Williams, my account, or at Right Side Media, the company account. You can see it on YouTube especially. And on YouTube, you get all kinds of content. You get all our short videos. You get our video podcast. You get all the stuff there. So just check us out. We're there, man. And I'm pretty excited about the footprint that we're putting onto Right Side Radio. Right Side Media, the parent company, is growing. And we're glad to have all of y'all along for the ride. All right. I got a couple of text messages. Let me get those real quick. Dorothy from Elkmont asked the question, will Trump be able to clarify the 14th Amendment and do away with birthright citizenship? Thank you. Thank you very much. Birthright citizenship. He says he's going to change it. Now, the question is, what does the Constitution actually allow? So here's what I believe is going to happen on the birthright citizenship thing. I think he's going to have to issue an executive order, which is going to trigger a lawsuit, which is going to have a U.S. Supreme Court hopefully take up the matter and give it a constitutional review, which requires what is known as strict scrutiny. And when they do something under a case of strict scrutiny, they have to apply the language of the Constitution as closely as possible to the intent of the original legislation passed, and then hopefully come out with a ruling that says birthright citizenship was never intended to be, if you walked across the border and dropped your baby in the sand, you were suddenly a U.S. citizen. It doesn't work that way, or the baby was. I don't think it was ever intended to be that way. But I think it's going to take the Supreme Court of the United States weighing in on that before we'll ever really have that one clarified. I got a text here from Brian from Huntsville saying, even the progressive Justin Trudeau from Canada wants the Keystone Pipeline back on track. Energy security and influence against tariffs by the USA. Yeah, listen, there were a lot of jobs. You and I were talking, JP and I were talking during the break about the Teamsters. And one of the reasons why they pulled their support from Democrats was the you heard an interview with
it was the Teamsters
Sean Fain
he's UAW. I can't remember the name of the Teamsters guy, but okay. him and Tucker did a podcast where they talked about that and how Kamala was shocked that they didn't back her.
Part of the reason he cited was the Keystone Pipeline.
Yeah, Keystone
right?
Pipeline. They took thousands of jobs from that. In other areas like EVs and you know it's. they're killing the union workers, but then they expect their support. It's pretty funny.
Well, I think you're going to see some of that change, like, right away. And listen, we had a clip, and I'm going to go back to it again now and pick up another piece of it. There's a Karl Rove. I got clip number two coming, buddy. You ready? Karl Rove interviewing with Trey Gowdy, talking about what the GOP needs to do. He, in the first segment we talked about, he said part of it is do things that they can see and get done, like, right away. And don't dally. And one of those he said is immigration. And everybody wants immigration addressed. I mean, that was one of the economy and immigration were the top two issues throughout the entire campaign season. But let's hear what he had to say going further in the discussion. Trey Gowdy interviewing Karl Rove.
Well, I think Senator Romney was right. They went far too left, and it colored people's perception of who they were. And when they came into the set of challenges that were at the top of everybody's mind in 2024, inflation, the border, America's position in the world, our military strength, the cultural fabric of the country, the Democrats were on the wrong side of all of those issues. And they didn't seem to get it, particularly the cultural side of the issues. And the American people said the more they heard about where they were on those kind of issues, the more they said, well, I'm nowhere near that. You're against the values that I hold dear. And you toss on top of that the broken border, the rampant inflation, a weak military in a dangerous world. And the Democrats were in a pickle. Now, they came close. Don't get me wrong. They cut our margin in the House. They lost the Senate. They lost the White House. But they lost the White House by 1.5% in the popular vote. We ought to remember that, because the Democrats have big problems. The Republicans have lesser problems, but they still have to do a better job of explaining who they are to get a more substantial majority than a 1.5% victory in the popular vote.
All right, stop there. Okay, he is not wrong. We have a mandate, but that mandate does not carry with it huge margins in terms of the politics, right? We have a mandate. I believe if you look at the electoral map, if you look at the popular vote map, if you look at just the county by county in the United States map, even in California, you'll find more red than blue. Blue is becoming a very rare color when you look at the political map, except that when you consider the population base in those blue areas are in massive metropolitan areas like New York City and Chicago and San Francisco and LA. All right. But what does that mean to us? It means that while we may have a mandate in terms of what the majority of America wants, that the majority is slim enough to where we should be concerned with whether or not we can do what we said we would do, whether or not we can get the job done, because the public swung our way because the left had gotten so far left and radical. And he pointed out the sociocultural issues. And what he's talking about there are things like, you know, transgenderism and the idea of gender-affirming care for kids and putting agendas into school and trying to do away with Title IX protections for women and just on and on. DEI, this being the thing, critical race theory. Listen, the left got so culturally, progressively far to the left that it drove voters to the right. And we cannot lose sight of that. And we need to know that not only were we heard at the polls, but that now we'll be heard in D.C. on a daily basis. So what we have to see happen now, and Karl Rove is not wrong. I think Karl Rove is a moderate. I think Karl Rove is but he's also, Karl Rove is not afraid to be a truth teller when the time comes. And he's telling Republicans right now that we can lose this if we don't jump on it and message it well, because we have notoriously in the past gotten in our own way constantly by not being able to follow through on what we said we would do, because we fight amongst ourselves. I'm not asking for a watering down of the message. I think we need to drive forward with some of the things that are the red meat and just get her done. There's no time for moderation right now. There has to be a change in the way we spend. There has to be a change in our foreign policy. There has to be a restoration of our military. There has to be a securing of our borders. There has to be a shifting of the allowance of the left to impact our children. And if you get all those things done, and by the way, message it while you do it. Yell it from the tops of the hills. Tell the world we are back. And I guarantee you, we'll be able to keep the majority we have in the next two-year cycle. But don't forget, I mean, we're looking at 2 years to get it done. Now, I tell you what, I did this on purpose. I literally let the last two dippers kind of flow together. It's almost as if I've been talking through dipper number three while I was still in dipper. Dipper number three is called the end of an era. And that was a great segue into just a few minutes here with it. It's going to be a three-dipper day, dude. Three.
We'll see if John considers it a three-dipper day.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Some are calling this that we're seeing right now the end of a progressive era. What does that mean? Well, so historically speaking, politics goes around, comes around, right? Politics is cyclical. It comes in cycles. And in the early parts of the 20th century, like 1905-ish to 1920s, you saw what was known as the progressive era. People got away from big corporate giants and began to move towards what some consider at the time, what now would be conservative policies, felt very leftist back then. But what I'm saying is there was a whole generation of Americans that began to see things in a different light, and it was called the progressive era. And it wasn't all for the best. And the progressive era, modern speaking, has really been the last about 6 years. The last 6 years have seen a shift in the progressive politics going from what used to be kept behind closed doors to being touted on billboards. You know what I'm saying? Drag Queen Story Hour would have never been thought of in a broad sense until the last few years. Gender-affirming care, what a ridiculous concept that is. It's really gender non-confirming care. The idea that we would have surgeries on children has never been thought of. The idea that we would have our military being used as a place to spend federal dollars to fund abortions would never have been thought of. The idea that we would say that we're going to disrupt the entire auto industry to push a EV agenda would never have been thought of 6, 7, 8 years ago. We've got to get back to the era of common sense. And that's part of what we're saying here. Newsmax has an article that was very interesting. Came out yesterday. It says the progressive era ends as the global shift to the right gains momentum. You're watching in Germany, in France, in Italy, and certainly Donald Trump's win in the United States. You're watching a world shift because of things like economic uncertainty, record immigration, just basically political fatigue. People are tired of being told that they're wrong for feeling the way they do. They're tired of being told that it's okay for the government to shut you down. They're tired of being told that the government is the most important thing, and if you don't like government, you're a racist. They're tired of it. So the reality is we are moving out of a place where progressive politics on a global scale appears to be taking a setback, and some are calling it now the end of the progressive era. And I hope it's true, man. I do. American Enterprise Institute has a quote in here saying it's a broad shift that goes across countries. Working class people are just pissed off, he says, about immigration, about culture war, about relatively poor economic performance, all of it shaping the working class for the 21st century. The European Union is seeing issues. You've got in England, I love the fact that you've got Nigel Farage making grounds with his Conservative Party. He's one of my favorite politicians worldwide. If you want to see a great speech, go Google Nigel Farage Brexit speech to the EU. You will laugh and enjoy your moment. But that's where we are. I think that we're looking at the now what is going to be, you better get it done and get it done fast. I think Speaker Johnson is probably going to survive, but he may have to go through a couple of votes and some name calling. And then I think the Republicans better get busy, and they better get busy quick. And it better be some red meat in the getting busy, because I don't think we're going to have the luxury of claiming we got the next 4 years to get it done. No, you don't. You got the next two. And then you have to fight to keep the two after that. That's where we are. Badger from Athens has checked in. He says, in the nonsense, return pride to the great USA, and in 2 years we ought to sweep the polls. I agree with you, man. That's what we got to do. All right, let's take a break right there. Last break. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. You guys stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. Just, I mean, like, man, making common sense like a superpower. Saving the world one soundbite at a time. Pulling pins on truth grenades and dropping truth bombs. That's all the stuff we do around here. Giving you all the truth you can put on a bumper sticker. I'm trying to think of whatever else I say. I got all kinds of little one-liners I say out there. We need a T-shirt with all those.
You put them all on the back of a T-shirt.
All on the back of a T-shirt. Yeah. Hey, listen, tomorrow I have given the Right Side Media staff the day off, so we will be off tomorrow and the next day, New Year's Day.
New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, yeah.
Yeah, New Year's Eve, New Year's Day. We are playing what is known as best ofs in the industry. We're playing some repeat performances and things. It'll still be on the air, but tomorrow is not going to be a live show, just be aware. I say all that to also say that tomorrow is the last day that Right Side Radio will be on 101.1 out of Birmingham. Contract negotiations, I've said multiple times, came to a conclusion, and we decided the best thing to do was part ways. And so all of you on 101.1, you will still be able to hear us online whenever you want to, but I want to thank you for the last 2.5 years. And I want to give a shout out to Big Dave Richardson, who is the engineer at Crawford in Birmingham at 101.1. He's an amazing, listen, he helped us set up our Right Side studio. The guy's amazing. Every time we have needed something, we've been able to text him, and there he was. So Big Dave, if you're listening, just know that we love you, and we consider you to be a Right Side ruffian OG, and we thank you for your work, and we thank all you listeners out there at 101.1 for helping us to really spread the word across North Alabama. Now, we are also branching out, though, into Chattanooga, and we're excited about that. So WGOW out of Chattanooga, we go live here in a couple of weeks, and we're still doing the engineer stuff with them, getting all the tech in place, but we really love the idea that we are expanding into multiple states. I will say that this has been an odd, interesting last 3.5 years. I did not expect to be sitting here in a studio where my grandkids could run in like they did a little while ago at this stage in my life and have a radio show. Or a podcast, or other podcasters working with me, or getting something published in 18 different news. I did not see this coming. The only way it works is because God said, go do it, and you guys were there with us. So thank you very much. So from the bottom of our hearts here at Right Side Media, which is the parent company, at Right Side Media, we appreciate you. We do what we do on purpose. We do what we do with intentionality. We come in here every day. JP and I sit in the studio. JP does a lot of other tech work on the side. Butters does a lot of work with us. Natalie working, Alicia working. I mean, we got a crew here that is doing what it does because we love what we do, but because we love y'all. And so every single day, I hope you understand the mission and the message of this show. The mission being that we're going to do the 4 E's. We're going to educate, enlighten, empower, and entertain you on what it means to be a conservative and a Christian walking around in today's world. And that's the mission. And we're doing all we can to accomplish it. But every single day, I hope you also understand that the mission is driven by the message. The message is that I want on this show for you to know that we stand for the idea that Jesus is Lord, America is great, Alabama is beautiful, and life is worth living. And we've been saying it that way for the last almost 4 years. So thank you for making Right Side Media what it's been, and we can't wait to see what happens in 2025. All of y'all involved with us. By the way, the grades are in. I got to end on that.
Yeah, I saw that.
Grades are in. JP gets an A double plus for his amazing performance, which means today's winner is obviously Phil with a triple plus for a unique third dipper.
A unique third dipper.
He says, by the way, Phil, I missed your show Thursday and Friday. I was so sure there were going to be reruns, but later a good friend let me know that you were indeed live on those 2 days, so I got to give myself an F minus for Thursday and Friday. That's okay, brother. You got so many extra credit points stored up. You're good, man. Your GPA is solid.
Does he know what we talked about while he was gone? About
Don't tell him we mentioned Seinfeld. And then Jeff from Indiana chiming in on the text line telling us Happy New Year. Happy New Year to you, brother. Call in soon. And then listen, there's some of the folks out there who've been listening on AM 850. That's part of the 101.1 network. So just know that's changing too. All right, you guys. We love all of you. Just remember, there's more of us than there are of them. God's still on his throne. Stay in the fight. We'll see you.